Welcome everyone, you're listening to Innovate or Die, a podcast about innovation, digitalization and aviation. I'm your host, Lorenzo Murzilli. In today's podcast, we speak about sustainability in aviation. Sustainability, the catchword of the 21st century, that have become even more important with the implementation of the Agenda 2030. I want to find out more about its conceptual background and try to understand its not really straightforward relationship with aviation. How far can the aviation sector effectively contribute to solutions instead of being only a problem? And why is there a need for new business models in order to advance? I welcome here Dr. Albrecht Ehrensperger, head of the thematic cluster Innovation for Sustainable Environment at the Center of Development and Environment at the University of Bern. Welcome, Professor Ehrensperger.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about sustainability. This is the topic of today's podcast. And the first question I have is, you know, sustainability is a long burning issue. However, for our public, can you define for us what does sustainability actually mean?
Yeah, it's true that the term sustainable development has been in the limelight since a while. Some people are even saying that it has become a meaningless buzzword. But the truth is that the idea of sustainable development is probably as old as humankind. When ancient civilizations made offerings to the gods, it was to avoid chaos and to make sure that the order of things, the functioning of the world, is being preserved. This implies that for them too, the world could move into an unsustainable direction if nothing is done against that. The difference is that sustainability probably had a different meaning to them than to us, just as it might have a different meaning to you than to me. Before, let's say, the accident in Fukushima, sustainability had a different connotation than immediately after that accident. And during the Second World War, it meant something else than during the COVID crisis. What I mean is that sustainable development is not something that is static and defined for all times. It is a normative concept. It is a moving target that is never reached, and that is constantly being redefined. I know this is quite discomforting. We all like to have certainties and clear goals, but let's face it. When you listen to the political debate in Switzerland, for example, you realize that we are far from having a solid consensus on what sustainability means. For some parties, it is synonymous with stopping climate change, while for others, there cannot be sustainability without economic growth. A scale is an additional difficulty. A sustainable development goal that is universally valid at a global scale might need to be addressed in a differentiated way at local scale. For example, it makes a lot of sense at a global scale to say, no further loss of biodiversity. But at local scale, one might have to sacrifice biodiversity in one place, for example, for the sake of agriculture or infrastructure development, and to compensate that loss of biodiversity somewhere else. The same is true for other sustainability dimensions. Of course, it would be great and much easier to have a clear, universally applicable set of goals that everyone can follow. The 2030 agenda that you mentioned is an attempt to provide such a universally valid framework, but its practical implementation shows that sustainability goals and targets are not applicable in a uniform way all over the world. The specificities of different contexts play a major role in determining how the agenda can and must be implemented.
Thank you for this very well thought answer. I mean, what is interesting to me is that the United Nations 2030 agenda actually consists of 17 goals and 169 targets. So is it possible to address all of them without experiencing these trade-offs?
No, I don't think so. Trade-offs are unavoidable, that's a fact. Even if the old concept of sustainable development, you know, the one with the three sustainability dimensions, even if this concept somehow implies that there is a sweet spot between environmental, social, and economic targets, where a win-win-win solution is possible, reality shows that sustainability solutions more often lead to win-win-lose or win-lose-lose situations. What does that mean? If trade-offs are unavoidable, the process of designing a sustainable development pathway needs to integrate these trade-offs into the negotiations that are required to reach a compromise on how to achieve sustainability. And this, in turn, means that the question of equity is crucial. If you participate in shaping sustainable development in your society, but you find yourself systematically on the losing end of the decision-making process, or if you are not even allowed to participate in that process, you will not support the solution that it comes up with.
So what do these interactions among the different SDGs, like the trade-offs and the synergies you're talking about, mean for policy and policymaking? So like, are our long-standing structures able to deal with those, with these interactions, or not?
I think they are at least partly able to deal with them. If you look at Switzerland, our national, cantonal, and communal policies have integrated the notion of sustainable development into their workflows, and they have made it part of their priorities and evaluation criteria. For example, in the commune in which I'm living, we are currently working on a new local land use plan, and this plan integrates thoughts and requirements having to do with sustainable development, for example, biodiversity, energy saving, mobility, and so on. Mostly these references to sustainable development are just generic, but at least they are there. And at national level, Switzerland has embraced the 2030 agenda, and under the lead of the Federal Office for Spatial Development, it has even assessed the ambitions of the current national goal setting in comparison to the targets of the 2030 agenda. So yes, our structures are at least reacting to and integrating the notion of sustainable development. However, there are also challenges. Our policy and public management, and the one of most countries in the world, by the way, is structured along sectors. For example, economy, agriculture, education, environment, civil aviation in your case. And sometimes these sectors are not communicating with each other. This means that solutions are often developed from a sector perspective. In the worst case, different departments work on the same issue in the same region without knowing about each other's plans. This sector-specific approach is not adequate for addressing trade-offs and for taking advantage of synergies between different development goals. Imagine a department in charge of, let's say, water resources, establishing a water management plan without communicating with the department in charge of agriculture, which has to deal with the same resource in relation to irrigation. That plan will have very little success, chances of success, or big chances of triggering conflict at least. This means that transversal linkages among different departments should be reinforced in our governance structures. Inter and transdisciplinary approaches are often mentioned in this regard, or things like science policy platforms that enable different stakeholders to address a sustainability issue together with the guidance from research. And some municipalities in Switzerland have started working with advisory boards composed of scientists to help them in gaining this transversal vision that is necessary for addressing interactions between different sustainability targets. And in Sweden, there was a very interesting experiment where scientists identified the interactions between the most relevant sustainability targets at national level. And then they derived logical alliances between different governance sectors that would be most suitable for addressing the sustainability issues arising from these interactions. A similar experiment in Switzerland would be quite exciting, actually.
In the case, how do we define the metrics then in terms of describing progress and setback of this 2030 agenda? At the end of the day, like, who is made accountable for this?
The agenda is agreed upon by the countries that have signed the respective UN resolution. Therefore, they are the ones in charge of reporting on the progress made. However, this reporting is not compulsory. Countries are supposed to draft a so-called voluntary national review, and data from these reviews goes into a global database that is published in a synthesis report. The last one of these reports is available for the year 2019. On the metrics, the UN has published a global indicator framework that includes indicators for each of the 169 targets of the agenda. The metrics are highly variable depending on the issue addressed. For example, target 12.5 on waste management is measured through a national recycling rate. And one could argue that this indicator is incomplete as it does not provide any information on primary waste generation. Some agencies are custodians for a number of indicators. For example, the Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, is the custodian of 21 indicators. For example, the indicator for target 15.4 on the protection of mountain ecosystems. This indicator is called Mountain Green Cover Index, and it is assessed through the analysis of satellite images. By the way, this is not the only target for which a digital technology such as remote sensing and satellite imagery is highly instrumental for monitoring progress, as well as setbacks, of course. Indicators having to do with food production, or basically all targets and indicators having a spatial dimension, could benefit from such technology as well. Drones are probably covering too small areas for monitoring at national level, but they could play an important role for local scale monitoring in particularly important areas, for example.
Can you give us some examples of which areas would those be? What areas would those be?
I can give you an example from one of our projects in Eastern Africa. We are working with the government of Kenya to find a way to manage an invasive plant that is called Prosopis, which was brought into Africa and other parts of the world in the 80s from Latin America. Prosopis is a small tree growing in arid environments, and it is one of the 100 worst invasive species in the world. In Eastern Africa, it has destroyed millions of hectares of grazing land that is essential for the livelihoods of local communities. So managing invasive plants includes different types of measures: early detection and rapid response, prevention, and when the area has already been invaded, control of the invasive plant. Drones could play an important role for early detection and rapid response. In our project, we have used satellite imagery for that purpose, but the higher resolution of drone images and the flexible utilization that they allow could help in identifying, for example, single trees or smaller thickets, which is not possible with satellite images. Come to think of it, it would be great for us to work with an organization or a company that uses drone technology. If you know someone, just let me know.
I will for sure. I think this is very interesting, because I mean, traditionally aviation is normally defined kind of as a problem in the context of sustainability. And what I'm interested in is more like, how far could aviation contribute to solutions? Also, I mean, considering this new aviation, so the emergence of drones and new technology, and what could be the role of a Federal Office of Civil Aviation, like our role in fostering these new technologies and making them connect and to the sustainability goals?
Well, the example that I just gave on invasive plants shows that drone technology is a very specific segment of aviation, I think, can be used to support sustainable development initiatives. There are many other examples. A few years ago, one of our students conducted a project using drones to help understand how soil erosion takes place and to identify what areas are mostly at risk. The project was conducted in the hill zones of the canton of Freiburg. And we use drones because they allow reacting very quickly. You know, we would wait to hear that there was a particularly strong rainfall happening in the area. And well, rainfall that could potentially trigger erosion events. And we would go there and make a survey with a drone. And the drone, together with the soil map of Switzerland, proved to be invaluable for understanding these erosion processes and giving recommendations to the farmers in the region. Now, when it comes to, let's say, classical civil aviation, the question is maybe trickier. Civil aviation is mainly considered a sustainability problem in relation to climate change because of its greenhouse gas emissions. At the same time, even though tremendous progress has been made in aircraft efficiency, it is difficult for this sector to replace fossil fuels with something else for obvious technical reasons. It is much easier to install a heat pump instead of a fuel burner to heat a house than to replace kerosene with electricity in planes. Some airlines have done trials with bio-kerosene from oil plants, but in my view, this is definitely not a solution. I mean, powering planes with biofuels would require immense surfaces of farmland, and we simply do not have that much reserve. In short, technical solutions will not get rid of the sustainability problem of civil aviation, which is why civil aviation most probably has often chosen the compensation path. Some airlines compensate their emissions by supporting projects that contribute to reducing carbon dioxide emissions or to create carbon sinks elsewhere, for example, through reforestation. The International Civil Aviation Organization even has a carbon offsetting and reduction scheme for that purpose. It works together with the Forest Carbon Partnership Facility of the World Bank. However, there are quite some doubts towards the efficiency of such compensation mechanisms. So what is left is to develop new business models, maybe, for civil aviation. Aviation is a highly efficient mode of transportation that can help, for example, in mitigating humanitarian crises. It can help fighting forest fires in California. It can transport much needed medical material and other material into areas affected by natural disasters, such as earthquakes, and so on. But its current main business model is to allow as many people to fly as often as possible in their free time. And this is by no means an environmentally sustainable business model. So maybe the Federal Office of Civil Aviation could become an important partner for civil aviation to design such alternative models. Another role that the Federal Office of Civil Aviation could play is to avail technical expertise and to broker technical knowledge between aviation engineering and sustainable development initiatives. I mean, we talked about the drones before and the fact that maybe some development projects would be glad to have access to that technology. So I think there the Federal Office and civil aviation in general could play that brokering role of facilitating the technology for these projects.
Professor Ernst Berger, thank you very much for having been with us today. I think it was very enlightening, at least to me, and I hope to all our listeners. So thank you again.
You're most welcome. Thank you too.
And that's all of this episode of Innovate or Die, a podcast about innovation, digitalization, and aviation. If you'd like to listen to more of such conversations, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or stay in touch by signing up to our newsletter at www.foca.admin.ch. In case you have any questions, contact us on LinkedIn on Swiss U-Space implementation. This podcast was produced by the Innovation and Digitalization Unit of the Federal Office of Civil Aviation. Thank you for listening.